Emma, good evening.
Good evening, Dom.
What drew you to J.D. Salinger to begin with?
So I think I, like many other teenage readers, first had The Catcher in the Rye, his only published novel to date, prescribed as a high school text in English class.
Yes, me too.
Yes, there's a lot of us, certainly. And it was definitely the first book for me as an adolescent reader that really struck a chord. The kind of things that Salinger was writing about in this book really appeal to specifically teenage sensibilities. And so that was why I really liked that particular book when I first read it.
And now, there is something extraordinary about the novel. It was very innovative in terms of the way that the narrator, Holden Caulfield, sort of talks directly to the reader. And it seems to have this long history of forming really intense emotional bonds with some of those readers, doesn't it?
Absolutely. So I think when any text kind of becomes very, very popular and has a really diehard following of readers who relate to it on a deep or emotional kind of level and get very passionate about it, it becomes vulnerable to all extremes of interpretation. And The Catcher in the Rye is notoriously a text like that. There have been several shootings associated with the book. The guy who shot John Lennon actually was found at the scene reading a copy of The Catcher in the Rye, and inside his copy he'd written, "This is my statement," and signed off as Holden Caulfield, the main character.
Hugely chilling, I guess, as well, because so much of the book's set in Central Park, and John Lennon lived on the cusp of Central Park there in the Dakota Building. So very strange moment in history, that.
Absolutely. Salinger never really commented on the shootings associated with his novel during his lifetime. By the time this happened, he'd well and truly withdrawn from all aspects of public life. He published his last short story in 1965, gave his last interview in 1980, but certainly we can assume that he would view these kinds of shootings as obviously very, very horrible.
That must have been also disturbing, wasn't it? Yeah, and there's another one you mentioned in your article in Conversation, an attempt to assassinate no less than the President of the United States.
Yes, it was Ronald Reagan, his would-be assassin, kind of was captured, and then the police found a copy of the same novel in his hotel room. So that was, I think, within months of the John Lennon killing. So it is, I guess, a bit shocking. Salinger famously hated critics reading his text the wrong way. He was very particular about how his text should be read, and he would kind of accuse critics he disagreed with or who took a particularly controversial stance on his work as misreading the text. And so I think we can safely assume that these kind of individuals who've taken these actions in a very emotional response to The Catcher in the Rye, Salinger would consider that an absolute misreading of what Holden Caulfield stood for.
How do you think Salinger wanted people to interpret the story? What was he trying to achieve with The Catcher in the Rye, regardless of how some people with mental health issues might have interpreted it?
Yeah, it is tough. Critics have interpreted The Catcher in the Rye in multitudes of ways, and I think because J.D. Salinger withdrew from public life, there is that big tendency to kind of read into his work what he wanted to say, because there's this total absence of his comment in the public sphere. When he was younger and obviously much less guarded, he would readily tell friends that Holden Caulfield was a version of himself or a younger version of himself. And that's quite common with a lot of his characters. They all have similarities to their author.
There's another character called Seymour Glass who I suppose there might be some similarities too. But I guess with Holden, reading it, I didn't feel as though by the end of the book, when I was an adolescent myself, I mean, it sort of spoke to me in a way, but I didn't end up thinking, gosh, this really is something we're supposed to get on board with. I mean, I guess the view is, if people remember the word phonies, which is Holden's sort of refrain, he's just always talking about phonies. Do you end up sharing Holden's views, or do you end up feeling sorry for Holden? You know, do you see him as a reliable narrator, or do you see him as a flawed individual? And perhaps from what you're saying, the flaws that are clearly there, that I guess we read, perhaps they weren't intended. It's a fascinating question. I guess we'll never know.
It is a book that he spent about 10 years of his life writing, so I don't know that we can consider anything as being incidentally in the text. It's quite a short novel, and so I think everything that's there is there for a very deliberate reason.
I'm just wondering, he may not have been aware, though, in a sense. If that was honestly, if it was his testimony about how he saw the world, I guess he might not have been aware of how it read.
film. One of the things I'm interested in just his body of fiction as a whole is the way that he writes about grief and the way that that may have been influenced by his own service in the Second World War and experiences of post-traumatic stress. And it is a very common symptom of suffering post-traumatic stress to kind of suffer through these experiences over and over again. I look at it like he's showing writing or storytelling as a kind of catharsis for dealing with all these repressed emotions that come from dealing with grief or unresolved grief.
There's certainly a lot to work with, even in that novel, let alone the other works. Now, Emma Michelle is with us. She's studying J.D. Salinger at Melbourne University, and the novel The Catcher in the Rye obviously has a huge influence still today, and we're thinking about it 6 years this week since J.D. Salinger died, and all the mysteries that surround what he left. If there were more novels, we think there were, and you explore in your article for The Conversation some of the possibilities of other manuscripts sitting there waiting for some event to trigger their release, potentially.
Certainly. So there was a documentary and a companion biography that came out in 2013 that suggested from many interviews with his friends and colleagues and family that even though he didn't publish after the mid-60s, he still continued to write religiously every day of his life until he passed away, and that there are, in fact, supposedly five forthcoming books that he's approved for publication between 2015 and 2020. So obviously last year came and went and we didn't have a Salinger publication, so it's still a bit unclear whether that's going to eventuate. But it is a very exciting time to be thinking about J.D. Salinger and revisiting some of his works.
Wouldn't it be extraordinary if amongst those manuscripts which we think are there waiting for release, there was more on Holden? Because he did tend to like returning to the same characters. The Glass family are in quite a few of his short stories, I think, for instance.
Certainly. I think one of the five books that is proposed or supposedly coming out involves a short story that does contain Holden Caulfield. It's called The Last and Best of the Peter Pans. I believe this short story was supposedly lost, and I'm guessing maybe Salinger was reworking it throughout the remainder of his life. That would be another really interesting one if it does come to light.
Let's hope so, and maybe we'll learn more about how Salinger later in his life viewed his most famous character. But there is something truly special about the novel. I still remember reading it as an adolescent. It did seem as though someone understood me at times. You know, I kind of remember reading it and thinking, gosh, I've thought that. And I thought it was just me, and yet here is this thing that they're telling us to read in English class, and suddenly, you know, sitting there disliking people in a train or whatever it is that you're doing.
Yep.
There's something about being adolescent that just captures.
Yeah, so as an early career writer who's interested in writing about adolescence and young adult fiction and that kind of thing, it's so important when you write for teenagers that your characters be relatable. Especially in Holden's case, he can detect someone who's insincere or a phony, as you said, from a mile away. So it is really important to get that kind of genuine coming through that will speak to teenage readers.
There's also a theme in Salinger's work that you've touched on in this article about the innocence of youth and the integrity of youth that comes with innocence. And you've made a parallel with the films of Wes Anderson, who also has a film world full of these precocious young people in films like Moonrise Kingdom, who somehow have a better handle on the world than the grown-ups around them. We see that, I guess, in some of the other movies as well.
Absolutely. So J.D. Salinger's influence is felt in a lot of places in film. Basically anywhere that has a misfit hero post-1951 when The Catcher in the Rye came out, you can pretty much assume that Holden Caulfield played a part in influencing that. But nowhere is his influence in film more evident than in Wes Anderson's films. That's an influence that Wes Anderson has acknowledged, certainly in his use of child figures or children. In Salinger's fiction, they're kind of equal parts characters as they are symbols. As you said, they represent this great integrity and directness of childhood that we kind of lose as we move through adolescence and into growing up. And so Moonrise Kingdom, as you said, the adults are kind of running around after these two children who seem so insightful and almost enlightened with the kind of integrity that they have about their lives. And so that's a really kind of obvious homage to Salinger. Certainly with Anderson's film, The Royal Tenenbaums is another obvious parallel to his Glass family.
Yeah,
as you said.
Family of child prodigies.
So in Anderson's film, there are three child prodigies struggling to adjust to adult life, and certainly Salinger's fiction to do with the Glass family. They were all children on a radio show who were very precocious, and then later in life they have to deal with the death of Seymour, and that greatly shapes their world. You know, it's a very tumultuous kind of adulthood that they go through to do with, you know, religious crisis and definitely grieving and mourning and that kind of thing. But in Wes Anderson's film, there's a lot of obvious parallels to the Glass family stories.
Yeah, there's a beautiful short story that I remember called, was it To Esme with Love and Squalor or For Esme? I can't remember the exact title. But this gorgeous story about someone encountering a young girl who essentially, is it Seymour who does it? I can't remember. And somehow her sort of unspoilt insight really, really moves him. And I guess, Wes Anderson clearly has drawn on that as well, hasn't he?
I think with Salinger's work, it's very much like a salvation from the childhood figure adults who are dealing with in that short story in particular that you mentioned. He meets this little girl just before he goes off to war and then receives a letter from her when he's like literally in the trenches, and it really helps him keep his sanity intact. And that's, kind of an obvious form of salvation by innocent child figure. Certainly Wes Anderson is aware of that and shows that in Moonrise Kingdom.
Yeah, and he's still making brilliant films to this day. Now, I guess finally, Emma, the question is, where do we go from here? Are we simply waiting to find out what the Salinger estate wants to do? I gather there have been a few little legal squabbles around the place trying to maintain control of all of his writing in recent years as well.
So it was... I guess from the perspective of a reader and a researcher interested in J.D. Salinger, a bit disappointing when 2015 came and went and we didn't get any new Salinger text. His literary trust that he established before he died were busy kind of fighting a small publisher over the rights to three of his oldest short stories. So there was a publication that came out last year, but it was a collection of three old stories. And so to date, we're still yet to see any of his five new books that are supposedly ready to go.
Well, fingers crossed, I guess, and then you'll get more to study in your academic career and we'll all get more text to enjoy from one of the great modern novelists.
Absolutely.
Thanks very much for joining us, Emma.
Not a problem, John. Thanks for having me.
And Michelle is a Melbourne writer who's currently studying J.D. Salinger at Melbourne University.